Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to Wireless, a series all about radio, broadcast on the first Monday of every month on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital, community, regional and national broadcasters, niche broadcasting, pirate radio, podcasting, radio ownership and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on the June edition of Wireless. The vintage offshore station Radio Caroline, whose huge success in the 60s prompted a crackdown on pirate radio in the UK, has been awarded a licence to broadcast. We get a report from last month's Craol Féile, the annual festival of community radio in Ireland, and we hear the second part of an interview with Jack Byrne of Near FM in Dublin, one of the founding fathers of the community radio sector.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
But first to Radio Retro, which each month delves into the archives to unearth a gem from radio history. In May, the British broadcasting regulator Ofcom announced that it was to award a full-time AM licence to Radio Caroline to broadcast to Suffolk and North Essex on the east coast of England. In its original incarnation, Caroline was probably the UK's most famous pirate radio station, broadcasting from international waters from 1964 until the early 90s. It was set up by the Irish businessman Ronan O'Rahilly in an attempt to break the BBC's monopoly. In 1967, the Marine Offences Act made it illegal to advertise on or with a pirate radio station, and O'Rahilly moved Radio Caroline to Dutch waters, where stations would be left alone until the 1970s. Only weeks after the Marine Offences Act, the BBC opened its new pop station, Radio 1, which was to cater for the same audience. Deterred, Caroline and associated stations continued to broadcast from radio ships into the 1980s, notably the MV Ross Revenge from 1983. British and Dutch authorities raided Radio 9, and the station finally went off the air in November 1990. Caroline has restricted broadcasting licences on AM and began broadcasting full-time on satellite and later the internet and DAB. Since 2015, Caroline has been broadcasting one weekend a month from the Ross Revenge as Radio Caroline North via Manx Radio's AM transmitter. The announcement by Ofcom marks a new era for the station, as it is to return to AM full-time and fully licensed. It really is a twist of irony for the station that defined British pirate radio in the heyday of the 1960s. The official tune of the station was a track called Caroline by the English band The Fortunes. The theme tune to Radio Caroline by The Fortunes. Caroline hopes to launch its new AM operation this summer, possibly by August the 14th, which will be the 50th anniversary of the Marine Offences Act. We hope to talk to somebody from the station on a future edition of Wireless. There's plenty of fascinating historical information about Radio Caroline on its website, radiocaroline.co.uk. If you have an archive recording for Radio Retro, feel free to get in touch through social media or on our blog, wirelessflirt.wordpress.com.
Wireless on Flirt of 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at wirelessflirt.
The Community Radio Forum of Ireland, CRAIL, held its annual Féile in Enniskillen on May 23rd and 24th. The annual event brings together representatives of Ireland's community stations, both current and aspirant, to share ideas and experiences, and also includes a series of workshops aimed at providing practical support for broadcasters. This year's Féile was hosted by Radio Southwest Clare Community Radio, which is based in Kilkee. Féile also includes the annual awards, which are open to all full-time and 100-day licensed community stations in the country. And we congratulate the team of the Flirt FM programme Riot in Wonderland, who won a distinction at this year's. Our station manager, Paula Healy, was in Ennistymon, and she joins me in studio now. So, Féile for years, and you're very familiar with what goes on. Maybe if you want to tell us about the achievement awards, first of all.
So I was just actually looking back for the purposes of this interview to try and figure out exactly how many Féile I'd been to, and it's an embarrassingly huge amount. But anyway, moving on to the it's basically something that was set up, I suppose, like 7 or 8 years ago at this point in community radio programming. It is non-competitive, however, because they thought people thought that in the spirit of community radio, pitting stations against each other when like for like isn't applicable. Given that some stations have, you know, one member of staff, in some cases they had none, friends might be going in for them as well, versus like the juggernauts of the likes of, you know, Radio Liffa with Liffa language, Near FM with all their staff, you know. So basically, all it means is that they are measuring programme standards against the criteria that they'd set out. So I can be like remarkably transparent and saying the judging criteria. I have been a judge previously as well, but never for the interests of fairness, or any student radio stations, because I'd be very partial to. It's things like community outreach and participation, programme standards, because if it's not listenable or if it's not enjoyable to listen to, it doesn't make any sense. Teamwork and innovation and development. So those are kind of what they're going for, and you just get a mark. And obviously, it's like either if you make the grade, merit. If you're fantastic, distinction. I'd say it probably would have been like nearly 50-50 merit distinction. But I think a lot of stations will kind of their best bet, or their brightest stars, or whatever it might be. So they knew what they're at, definitely.
So the Ride in Wonderland crew, then they came out in the top because they got a distinction.
They did. And when I was looking at what shows to put in, I was putting together the application, and I had a couple of shows that I thought of. But because of the criteria as well, you have to be very careful about what you pick. As we'd found previously, it was hard to get a music show, like just simply a music show was very hard to get over the line. And especially if there's a person presenting on their own, it's hard to indicate teamwork or whatever. But in this case, Riot in Wonderland, just they ticked all the boxes. I'm like, they had a team putting it together. We'd Owen and Rebecca, and formerly Aina and Claire and Mariel over the last couple of years as well, just working on it. And huge numbers of people coming in from the community. It was bewildering. When I actually went to jot them all down, I was like, I actually have to give up after 3 months worth, because I actually just can't write many. I just went, here's a sample. And we took a selection from the day that they had a social inclusion drop in, where they had like 5 minutes, everybody had 5 minutes to tell the listeners about what they do. So it might have been like a mock LGBT plus, then you had Galway Theatre Room, then you had somebody from Galway Travel just coming in for 5 minutes, just go. It was fantastic. It was really good to listen to. And then they also had the added bonus of having stuff like Vox Pops and like poetry and live musicians in studio. So yeah, it's kind of really just did everything that they asked of it. So
and that programme is moving to the same time slot as this now on a Monday.
In the esteemed Monday at 3 o'clock time slot. So Wireless is obviously on the first Monday, and I said to Rebecca, do you just want to go on the last Monday as well? So her show was on the last Monday. That's the first time that she moved there. And yeah, I feel like I just had to say it's now national award winning as well. So that was nice to put there. So yeah, no, I think it was well deserved anyway. And congrats to them.
You wanted to mention some of the other winners as well from this year as well.
Like, there's so many of them. There's an absolute huge amount. But I know that that Word FM won two, and that UCC won as well. And it was a great job, because some of the aspirant stations as well who weren't fully licensed actually won some of them, which is really, really good to see that they, you know, they had a shake at it. Different programmes that actually got awarded in the end. So maybe, possibly not. But I'd say it was kind of like, you know, maybe 46 off like merits and distinctions. But there's a huge range of things. The actual categories, I can tell you the categories this year. They had underserved voices, social benefit talk, commissioned programmes, ethnic and multicultural engagement, and social benefit music, and then commissioned programmes, which would be your sound and vision, or your Mary Raftery, it might be, or your Simon Cumbers. So yeah, it kind of just ticked all the boxes there and all the different output, and it was really, really good to hear. And they've got the feedback up online for the Writing Wonderland. It was all positive, which is good.
That's great. I said you've been attending for years, so you've seen it develop over the years. What are the aims of the event, Paula?
Well, it's kind of the flagship event for CRAIL, the Community Radio Forum of Ireland, for every year. And I was trying to track back how many there have been, and I think this is maybe the 12th, 13th Bashkin at it this year, and I'll just rattle back quickly through them. It was Near FM, West Dublin Access Radio, Athlone Community Radio, Phoenix FM, Us in 2010, Claremorris Community Radio in 2009, Liffey Valley, Dundalk, Inishowen, and Wired FM in 2005. Or maybe one or two before that, but Wired FM was my first fail ever, and wow. Yeah, I just kind of landed into it with a load of my students. So any organisation will have a national conference or a caucus or whatever it might be, but it's so multifunctional at this point. So you will have the CRAIL Coordinating Committee, the steering group, will have their meeting the day before, and they'll set out whatever. You'll have panel discussions, which I missed the panel discussion because I was upstairs furiously typing up my notes for the training session I had to give. You'll have people from NGOs and national agencies there. We had the Broadcasting Authority, people from the Wheel, you know, you'll have people usually down from Aintus and stuff like that to address all the community radio people. But then apart from that as well, you will actually have just individual sessions that anybody from a station can go to. It went from business and strategic planning, which is obviously managerial level, to literally handheld recorders, the very, very basics, which would be great for people coming in from aspirant stations that didn't have that level of expertise. So yeah, and then current affairs programming, Irish language, advertising, you name it, there was. So there was 22 different sessions this year, all told. And I managed to make it to four of them. I was giving two, so if I didn't, yeah, I should have been at six, but I ended up typing up notes for the rest of the time I was there. So that's my excuse anyway.
And what do you think the importance of the FAILA is? What does it achieve? What does it bring about?
Well, apart from it's solidarity, and it's having all of the people from different stations getting together in one room. You might say, why can't you do this on a Facebook forum? It's not the same. So if you get everybody in a room that wants to learn about interview techniques, and it's, you know, you do an exercise and then everybody's giving their own ideas, their best practice, or even when social media, I just wanted to find out what level all the different stations were at. It was so, so good to actually meet people face to face and to get a really good sense of what's happening. And the biggest thing as well is just, you know, to remind everybody that there is best practice. There's all that information is already out there. To stop thinking that you have to go to some social media guru to fix it all, because another station in the country will have done it. And it's just a really sense of belonging and knowing that there's other people out there in exactly the same predicament or lovely position that you're in, whichever it might be. So there's a solution out there already. If you have a problem in your radio station, somebody else has already had that problem and solved it.
And of course, last month was also a big month for Flirt FM, because you signed the new 10-year licence with the BAI, the Broadcasting Authority, which is due to begin on June the 21st.
John, I'm exhausted. At this stage, I really am very, very tired. But it just marks the end of a year of pretty hard work. I started with an expression of interest, or just getting back to the Broadcasting Authority last May, and I spent most of July trying to get the licence application together. And you know, you think once you actually handed it in, that's it. But they come back to you for clarifications, no more than an auditor would. You know, they'll always come back and say, well, what is this receipt actually for? Well, they'd say, like, you know, do you have this up to date and that up to date? You have to have your memorandum and articles of association, all your broadcast terminology and, you know, all your boards of directors and your governance up to date. And then eventually myself and our secretary, John Hannon, who's head of director of student services here, and our director, Bernadette O'Sullivan, who'd be one of the lecturers in the MA in Journalism in NUI Galway, went up with me, got the train. So we thought it was a special occasion. So let's shell out for the actual train to Dublin. And we had a great chat on the way up as well, which is really, really good, just to have like a couple of hours to discuss the station and other stuff that wasn't the station as well. Got up there and it was the CEO, Michael O'Keefe, who everybody would know from the Broadcasting Authority, who've had any interactions with them, and Pádraig Travers, who's the chair of the executive, just signed with them as well. And it was lovely as well, because there's loads of staff I'd been talking to as well that I never met. Do you know, it happens all the time. You just see somebody in an email, and if you actually go to something and you meet them in person, you're like, oh, you're that person. So it's just really lovely to see as well. The only thing I regret is that they had loads of really nice pastries and I forgot to have any. Yeah. That's just
next
pure
time.
Me. Yeah, next time. No, but like another 10 years time going for the license again. Oh, and I just wanted to like give a shout out to like when I came around the corner to get there, I saw this head I recognised, which was Ray, the station manager from Wired FM, who's like a lovely guy altogether. And I just ran over and gave him a hug. I didn't realise he was going to be there. I didn't realise that we're set up like, you know, to go one after the other. So it was really lovely. And it's just nice to see everybody.
So can you tell us one highlight of what's planned for the next 10 years then from the licence contract?
A lot of it is kind of the same, or just tightening up on everything that we've had to do before. I guess that, I know it's a lot of it is kind of the same. However, we put into this licence, instead of having to ask for an exemption or an exception, we have put in that we are allowed to broadcast, I think it's like... It's 10 hours a day on Saturdays and Sundays, whereas before we would have had to have said we're just trialling it, we're not sure. So as soon as we actually get up to full speed, we should be able to go on air for both Saturday and Sunday if we have enough people, enough shows, and if I have enough sleep. Yeah, we'll be able to do that. So that's not something we're going to have to ask a special permission for. It's actually we're just allowed to, which is very interesting.
That's a very important development, I think, for any radio station. That's great. So, and you mentioned Wired FM and Ray Burke, the manager there, and of course it was a big week for them as well, and for five other stations, because several community stations signed new licence contracts with the BAI as well. So is this an optimistic time for the community sector, do you think?
It is. It seemed like it took so very long for everything to get going. So just after us, we actually had Kieran Hurley, who's the manager of UCC 98.3. Obviously, would have known him for ages and ages. And then we had also Community Radio Castlebar, Connemara Community Radio, and Phoenix FM. So they're all up. And Phoenix brought about 25 people with them, so obviously they didn't have to come as far as everybody else did, so we're shown up by our numbers. But it's just really nice to see that they've decided that this is what's going to happen, it's the way ahead. And not only that there's actually plans for another of the couple of aspirant pilot stations to actually get their full licence and go for it, which is really, really good, because we have lost a couple of stations, whatever reasons, financial, governance, over the last couple of years, and you know, obviously much missed. And I think the communities that they used to be in are really, really, like, you know, kind of bear for the lack of them. So it's good to see that other services are springing up in their wake, and in other places that haven't even had any. So it was just, that's another thing about the FELA as well, it was just so good to see so many new stations coming to the meetings and to also be like very on top of things. So you've got the likes of Kilkenny Community Radio and Shamore and Eris, and like there's loads of others to name, but they're the guys that I was talking to over the weekend. Just really good to see, because they're new. They're just coming on stream, which is fantastic to see those guys. You know, I'm Kildarey. There's like, I just every couple of seconds, I could probably come up with another couple of ones. And it was lovely to see Dublin City FM as well. I hadn't met those guys before, so it's so good to see so many other people coming along. And of course, a lot of people would say that they want a community radio station in every town in the country. Wow, it's like, yeah, that's a lot of community radio, but why not?
I think Tramore and Kilkenny are just about to go on air.
They are, yes, yeah. But I think Tramore and Kilkenny have, you know, a huge groundswell of support behind them, and they've been waiting long enough as well, because this licensing plan, it took years for the Broadcasting Authority to roll it out. But then again, I mean, the Broadcasting Authority had to take over looking after RTE as well, and they had restraints on being able to hire more staff, and I don't know how they've done it the last couple of years. So a lot of the time, people, when they say the BAI, all they give out about is like complaints, decisions upheld, child, they don't realise all of the huge other amount of work they do up there. And you might say, oh, Paula, stop being so nice to them. But I've met the people, like, you know, in person, they're like the loveliest, soundest people that they just plough through so much work that doesn't actually get acknowledged or seen. So it's a huge thing. But now that they can eventually get going with this, and at the same time, I'm sure Spin Southwest and Today FM are delighted to get their licences too. I don't know if you've heard of those two, but they were also there.
That's great, Paula. Thanks very much for coming in to speak to us. That's Paula Healy there, manager of Flirt FM.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Last month, we heard the first part of an interview with Jack Byrne, one of the founding members of the community station Near FM in northeast Dublin and chairman of CRAIL, the Community Radio Forum. Near FM broadcasts 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and is run by a voluntary committee with the participation of over 150 volunteers and a small staff. In the second part of the interview, Jack Byrne explains the philosophy behind Near FM since its inception in 1995 and gives his views on the state of Irish radio today.
Another thing we do here in Near, when we set it up, we made two declarations of zone. We don't worry about Beyonce or Braddy or Brad, don't do that stuff at all. And if we're dealing with the other radio stations doing Manchester United and Chelsea, we try to do the local soccer, the local Gaelic clubs. So we mentioned the local clubs, and we've got our sports team used to the local matches. The kids get their names on air. The mammies love it. It's an alternative service to just talking about that every other radio station is doing anyway. So we've tried to do it differently in that sense. We don't do competitions again. I've helped to set up the credit union locally, so I'm a big believer in people cooperating for best effect, and I think competition is part of the problem that has the planet the way it is at the moment. So we don't do competition. Now, we had the dilemma then, if you have gifts, if somebody gives you in CDs or gifts or some item, so we do a sort of a lottery, all the names go into a hat. We don't ask listeners to compete for some silly question, compete against each other, because that's winners and losers. So we're trying all the time to find a model of radio that's different, that we don't just ape what commercial radio is doing. We stop and say about everything, can we do it differently? And my mantra is, there's always another way to do things. So that's, I keep pushing at them. And it's had a good effect. Modest and all that I am, I think I've had an effect on it. I do think people have got it into their heads now to look at alternative ways to do things as they're planning a programme or content. I see it all the time in people's utterances and how they're approaching issues and how they're interviewing people. So we definitely have pushed into a new space. I'd like it to go further, but I'm happy that enough people working within Near FM have taken on the idea of doing radio differently.
And what are the highlights, do you think, of the programmes over the last 20 years in terms of diversity, in terms of sale, and in terms of reflecting the kind of ethos that was behind the station in the first place? Can you give us a few example series that you think encapsulate what this station was supposed to be about?
One would be, we didn't have an outside broadcast, and good politician, probably should name check him, Michael Woods, a local politician, ball politician. But we killed ourselves when the station was open about three months, to bring all the politicians and the councillors and community activists in, and we fed them all tea and buns, and we worked hard and we got a good crowd. But as Michael Woods took me aside and he said, you're killing yourself, you're doing this all wrong. He said, what you do is you go to an event and you know, they turn up at funerals and they're there for a few minutes to be seen and they're gone, and be seen and they're gone, and be seen and they're gone. You go where the crowds are gathered in your community and be seen. And we call it still the Michael Woods approach. So we go to outside with our outside broadcast van now, to all sorts of sports events and cultural events. We don't have the trouble of organising, but the thing is, we turn up. We're not cynical. I think we should be there anyway. But there's a reason people are appreciative that their community radio station is sharing their event with them, and we're getting their profile lifted, and that has worked. And out of that, we get regular requests, with our outside broadcast stuff. So the community is aware that we're there to visit, visit them, whatever the events are. So that's a big one that we've learned to do and And there's a rationale and a logic to it. And I think that's always important, that you absolutely understand you're not doing anything on a whim. We understand why we're doing that. The other one would be, and I was only reminded of it recently, was that it could be 20 years ago when we were only sort of setting up Near FM. There was a sort of a media sort of friend. We were getting an increased number of immigrants coming into the country, particularly from Africa, when the Celtic Tiger was sort of starting to get into its stride. But you know, about flooding into the country. They were using words like flooding into the country. And I knew even around here in our own community, Arthur was starting to annoy people, and they were starting to get hostile. So we decided we'd do something with it. So we actually handed over the radio station to immigrants, Fiji Radio. We launched it in the Mansion House with the Lord Mayor. So we had a good gathering and with a really good, in that much, there weren't enough of them took us up on it. But it was more to make a statement. That this radio, and we actually reopened the station, and we got a lad from who was here as an asylum seeker. So we got him to cut the. But on, some of them, as I say, didn't absolutely want to talk about being refugees. The one guy from Nigeria. Big religious thing, and he read the Bible to Irish, local Irish citizens, and explained the Bible from his Nigerian perspective to them. So it people and assimilate into Irish society, but it was more the state media doesn't have to jump on this bandwagon of being hostile conflict between groups of people. And I was just a couple of weeks ago, Near FM had a series of three on hate speech in media, because it's still very much a current issue across, and we were lauded from academics, from other broadcasters, and one woman, an academic, actually remembered 20 years ago, she said, and Near FM, she said, I thought it was incredibly brave and original and she remembered Refugee Radio. So 20 years on, she remembered it. I'd almost forgotten it. But we did some nice things during it, because I think we actually might have even kicked off the Sports Against Racism. One of the events we had, because we kept challenging, if I can just stay on this for a second, John, it was okay, because I do think it was an important part of us trying to figure out how you do radio differently. So we had people in our here, they weren't quite the Medallion Brigade, but there were people who were doing country music or classical music, and they were saying, well, what can we, these were our own people. We were challenging them. So what are you going to do during Refugee Radio Week? What could they do? So we said to the guy doing the classical music, loads of these classical composers were refugees across Europe, not in their own country, when they were writing this brilliant music. Country music, weren't they all? The Irish immigrants went over to America, created country music, and it came back. So we tried to get them all thinking on the theme. The only group that sat stalwart and said, we're the sports team and we don't know how to do Refugee Radio. So we actually decided we'd have a seven-a-side tournament down in Fairview Park. I think the Irish Times put up the trophy. So we got Amnesty, we put up a team. The Irish Times put up a team. Near put up a team. And there were a couple of refugee teams. And this seven-a-side Nigerian team beat the whole lot of us off the park. There's photographs of me somewhere giving them their trophy. But we got our sports team down then to broadcast a match. So we had to do a bit of thinking for them. But the point was, I think all of them learned something, that there is ways to do media differently and to incorporate these, which sound like terrible, troublesome issues. But if you think creatively, you can actually incorporate them into your ordinary mainstream media. And I think the lesson we learned was that most mainstream media don't bother their arse to do that. We keep trying to find ways to incorporate into our media format and content, so that our listeners are getting both a music programme and maybe some sort of a message as well, a polemical message as well.
Then today, how many people are involved, and what is the, how is the now and the output of it?
Well, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 300. It's a huge project. I mean, I've been involved with community projects for a long time, but I never was at one that was so demanding. You know, most other community projects shut down for the summer or something. So It's a huge. I mean, overnight we do a lot of repeats, but out during the night is we do we've done drama. We actually pioneered radio drama, drama. And some of them are really good, very successful radio drama. So for an hour's drama, you know, that sort of thing. We've about 100, more than 100. There's like a whirlpool. There's some leave and others come back in. So we always have about 100 people at any one time train. And we're very nobody gets on air till they've had an induction, and we explain the ethos of the place, and we explain what's expected of them. But we also try to make it sound interesting, that they're not feeling that they're coming into some sort of totalitarian society. They do enjoy themselves. I think even in the office here, I think we've created a very good ambience of, you know, a nice friendly atmosphere. Most people who come in, we've a lot of CE people come in, and they, of course, they turn over every year or 2 years. But they're all amazed because they've come from other workplaces where there was awful hostility and backbiting in their workplace office. And they all remark on how relaxed and helpful it is here. And that, to me, is really an important part of a workplace attitude, you know, and I think it spills over into the content as well. So I think really what we're trying to do is create a way to do that whole clatter of things, the work office end through the content end. So we're just trying to create an enterprise that is trying to do these things differently.
And you have perhaps a broader variety of funding sources than some community radio stations do, but yet funding, of course, is a perennial problem for the community radio sector.
It is, and I mean, I'm sort of nearly finished at that, but that was all I did. I mean, people often ask me when I'm pontificating on going on with this, explaining my views of broadcasting a radio, and say, well, what programme do you do yourself? Wonder, does he put any of this into practice? And I don't broadcast at all. For the past 20 years, I've just been involved in fundraising for the project, plumousing politicians, getting grants. We've been fortunate, we've been successful as well, both European grants and local grants, we've been successful. And I do say that to stations. I mean, we went after education particularly, so we do a lot of educational programming, not formal education, but we do some of that. But a lot of our content is educational in content, and we've done well out of that. And Ross FM up in Roscommon, when they were setting up, they took my idea and they went after disability. And they featured disability and made sure the equipment was suitable. And they have been continuously funded from the departments that fund disability activities. So I keep saying to community radio people, with a bit of imagination, there are funds there. I mean, I remember years ago when we were setting up the first pilot lot, and I was already sickened because they were all talking about basically being small commercial radio and rate cards and all this sort of carry on. And I just did a brief, we were going down to a meeting in Cork, and I did a bit of research, and I realised it was, I think at the time it was 47 million punts available in total radio advertising, and there was over 600 million punts available for grants. So it wasn't my brilliant oratory. When they heard the two figures, everybody said, and I was saying, you're not radio stations. You're absolute. And they said, geez, we just bought a transmitter. And I'm saying, no, that's a tool. Your community development, that's your tool. So it was gratifying, but I say it wasn't my oratory. I think it was the two sums of money. The grants looked like a more attractive proposition. And there was two lads at the bar, and they said, you know, by the way, we're not radio stations at all. We're a community development project. So I downed my pint with satisfaction at that stage, you know.
But what about the funding issue on an ongoing basis then? And how can this be? I mean, it doesn't seem to be getting solved in any way.
It's not, because we had hoped that there was talk for several years that the licence fee, because even when Eamon Ryan was drawing up the 2009 Act, we were in the department, and they were fretting even then about the change in technologies and online, you know, people getting their news and content on tablets and on personal computers. And the Act didn't cover that at all. And they were talking even then, that was 2009, that they'd have to broaden the Act to cover this, and they're still talking about it. I think it would have come in by now, and we'd have got a slice of it. I do believe we'd have got a slice of it. I think the water charges scuppered any other talk of charges, even though the licence fee we were suggesting to the department, by broadening the base, they could have actually reduced per household the rate of the television licence. This new broadcast charge could actually have been smaller than the current licence fee. So I felt it was sellable, but I think it's gone for the moment anyway, while water is still trickling around the system. They're currently, as I said, the minister is looking at 7% of the licence fee goes into a broadcasting fund that stations can apply to. Now, it's very competitive, and we feel they're still not giving community radio a fair crack of the whip on this one. But Near FM has done quite well over the years out of it. But you have to get your act together. I mean, we've one guy full time. His salary comes out of his successful Sound and Vision. So he's cracked it. We're successful in every round, and there's a surplus for the station apart from his salary. So that's a model that we say to other stations, because a lot of them have just given up on it. They just can't figure it out. But the licence fee covers 7% of that, and it's of course RTE can apply for it, and all the commercials can apply for it, and a lot of it goes to television. I mean, the radio component is quite small compared to the television component of that Sound and Vision fund. So there's that one, but we do feel that eventually a broader online broadcast charge will emerge, and we'll just keep lobbying for a slice of it to come to community radio. At the moment, as I say, stations just pick up grants anywhere they can. The most consistent source of funding is Pubble at the moment, out of the Department of Social Protection. But we're debating with them, because I don't know who has decided on the policy, but if they give a station maybe 90,000 to cover a manager and two or three assistants, they're only all on minimum wage anyway, but you have to match that with about half that. So you're looking at about 55,000 a year in advertising. They won't even let you use Sound and Vision as part of that traded income, although the BAI and Revenue both say that this is traded income. But so it's just impossible. Stations just cannot raise 55,000. It's small stations in little rural towns, coastal towns, you know, with the Atlantic on one side of them and fields on the other side. It's impossible. And they're stressed. The managers of the stations are stressed. The committees of management are burnt out. And on top of that, even if they were successful, we're saying to Pubble, if they were raising anywhere near that kind of money, it'll impact on local radio, who's also has its revenues down and probably never will come back up. With a lot of revenue has gone online now, and local radio is not where it was even 10 years ago. So it's a bad model both for community radio and for commercial radio. And we think the politicians are listening. But I think it'll take another year or two till they come around to some funding model. It probably will be an online broadcast charge that will eventually surface, and we just have to keep plugging away that we get a slice of that, because I think it would be a better. There are models. We actually got the BAI to do research two, 3 years ago of how other European states fund community radio, and there are some really good models there. And they get a lump sum at the beginning of the year based on a programming commitment for the year, and they have to meet their programming commitments. But it's a model that. It talks about your content and developing your content, which is far better than forgetting your content and going down the high street selling ads. You know, so we think we know where we're going. We have a clear concept of Crail, knows where it needs to go. We just need to get the other players, particularly the politicians, to get their ducks in a row. But I think eventually, I'm confident that eventually, at the moment there's 25 community radio stations on air. There's two more coming on there this year that are new, and there's about 30 at different stages of development around the country. It's like mimesis. They come in clusters. When one town sees the neighbouring town with community radio, they say, why can't we have that? So it's a good model, and they're developing in clusters, and I'm confident that giving any sort of minimal funding that would give them some sort of sustainability, I think we could double the numbers of community radio stations over the next 5-6 years.
Online at near.ie and on air across northeast Dublin. 90.3, this is Near FM.
What about the future of radio and the future of radio, of community radio in particular, given online and digital and social media and so on? What are your views about that?
Well, I think that's why we have. That's why here in Neer, we actually, when we set up the radio station, we all set up excuse me, community television, and we have an IT platform as well. So we're conscious that eventually these platforms will merge, and we need to be ready to move to that place with them. So we have an online. We actually have a separate online radio service running in parallel with the FM broadcast here as well. So we're well placed to watch these technologies and see where they're going. We're one of the few doing it with that sort of awareness. I think we'll have built up an experience that we can share. I mean, we're happy to share it with other community radio stations anyway, to pilot this new model of emerging platforms and to see where they're going to adapt them to best suit the social benefit needs of our community, because we don't. I think that, as I say, I think social media at the moment is just an aberration, anything. It's just selling people to advertisers. We need to find a model that protects people's privacy. It gives them that sociability that they clearly yearn for, but also develops a model that is of social benefit to the participants.
How do you do that beyond the current social media platforms, which are so ubiquitous and so hegemonic, really, in a way, in current society?
Well, these are what we're arguing about. I'm actually suggesting that, this is why I say even here locally, I've suggested that we should set up a local equivalent of Facebook and get people who like what we're saying to move over onto that and take all their connections with them to our local Oscailge Fiacla Facebook. I don't give up on these things. I don't think these things are they are ubiquitous, absolutely, but I don't think that I actually console myself by saying nothing lasts. The Roman Empire doesn't last. Facebook is no bigger than the Roman Empire. Facebook's time will come and go. It will go. So in the meantime, I'm making that prediction now. You got it first, exclusive here on your programme. Facebook will demise and relax. But in the meantime, we've got to find out ways to move around it, find out why it's been socially so successful, and see can we ape that, mirror that, but in a different way. Take the technological sociability thing that people obviously like and merge that with our community media ethos. I think there's a way to do this. I mean, you don't give up on these things, but there's always a way. I keep saying there's always another way to do things.
You've probably put your finger on one of the great challenges facing community radio all over the world, is how do you merge these two apparently contradictory forces of this urge for sociability through technology with the ethos of community radio. So we'll see where you go with that.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask you then, we're coming near the end, about, I suppose, your views on the state of radio today in general in Ireland, maybe stepping away from the social media aspect, okay, but the radio as a sector. I mean, it's almost 30 years now since radio was licensed. We have different tiers of national, local and regional and broadcasters. A lot of people would say that it's perhaps far less exciting, cutting edge and far less edgy than it was during the pirate era.
Oh, well, absolutely. The pirate era, but I think the pirate era was just because it was illegal. I just think people get a buzz out of doing something that's not allowed. So there was always that. And we even though we were community radio, we had police raids. Our location was actually opposite the Garda station at one stage, for footing it up to them. And they did raid us. And I explained to the three young guards, I confused them, God love them. I explained that, no, because they were saying, you're pirate radio, saying, and I said, no, we're community. And clearly, Templemore didn't explain the difference to them. So they all left. They come up from my transmitter and they left and wished as well and didn't know it was community radio. So those three young guards, I hope they're all assistant commissioners or something now. But that was it. I mean, we had all that police raid. But I do think since then, I mean, there was a great buzz, of course, with local radio. I mean, I was licking my wounds and snarling somewhere in the corner because I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy to run at the diversified radio after RTE. I think a lot of them have done good local radio work. I mean, there's some good programming and they've turned up interesting individuals who have responded well and become radio person. I have to pause, but I have to say that as far as I'm concerned, local radio in Ireland is a distraction. it shouldn't be there. In my, it shouldn't be there. It's getting in the way of using these communications tools for real communication between citizens in this republic. They're actually it's a technology. I know that's a harsh thing to say, but that's my contention. With me on that one. But
Do you think that there should be no local commercial radio, and that all local radio, and that all radio, and that all?
Absolutely. I think communications resort, the tools, the technologies, should be used for allowing the fullest possible communication and dialogue between citizens, not as fodder for shows or where they're pitted against each other for the crack of crows. These are a misuse of an important technology that species have developed. We were dispersed across the planet. We needed a means. I think it's part of an evolutionary process. I'm now getting up on my soapbox. I think The dispersed is a means, as the next phase in evolution, to communicate with each other, to find each other scattered from the campfires. And 200 years ago, we began technologies, but almost immediately, most of them were privatized, and the exploiters saw the power it was giving them, not only the profits to control agendas and the public discourse. And I think that's the reason the planet is where it is today, because commercial hasn't sort of done itself any favours either. It has followed too much of that discourse. So my contention is that entire use of a communication resource is a misuse, and human beings should appropriate all communications technologies and use them for real communication and discourse across the planet.
So for people who want to read about celebrities or hear about celebrities and listen to bland music, would you say then that they should be using whatever exists online and that radio should be totally distinct from that?
Well, I'm talking broadly about all technology, all communication technology, including online technology. I think as the technologies evolve, as I say, NIR is trying to move with these technologies and hang on to an ethos. I think as we were developing the onlines to move on from the radio and television, we should have been moving as a human race with an ethos of here's a new facility for communication. That's the way we should have been using it. In a parallel universe, I hope somewhere they're using it in that way. I just think it's been such a lost opportunity. But I wouldn't sort of say that we have to be po-face. I mean, if you had that sort of total control of content, of course there'd be room for entertainment. You know, people have to also relax by times, so they do need some time down. And if there's a celebrity going through some tribulation and angst, yes, sure, we should human species. You know, even Brad Pitt is a member of the human race. So we can has to be done in a different context, not as part of a selling a product. I mean, I do a different way to do things, and you could have had an entertainment industry and all that information around it in a different context.
Jack Byrne, one of the founding members of NIR FM in northeast Dublin. You can listen to NIR on 90.3 FM in Dublin or online at nirm.ie. And that brings us to the end of this month's edition of Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. We'll be back on the first Monday in July with more news from the radio world. I do hope you'll join us then, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. We also have a blog, wirelessflirt.wordpress.com. Until the next edition, John Walsh wishing you good listening.
Wireless. M101.3.